Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Rock. Bill Rock, our voice here, our announcer on the John Gambling Show, 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Good morning. You have the snowshoes on?
You know, when I got up this morning, first thing I did is I walked over and I looked out the window.
Good thing, yeah.
And there was no snow.
There wasn't any snow.
And I, you know, went and ran, and no snow. And then I come out, snow. Yep. Who knew?
Who knew? And there you go. You've got, obviously, John Doherty out with his crew.
We're, you know, rushing everything, you know, a million plows, a zillion tons of sand. I don't think we're going to need all of that. The roads basically are clear. Side streets are very slippery and covered. This afternoon is supposed to be pretty warm. And that will...
Yeah, the sun should help you along with the melting.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's we're going into the spring. Daylight saving time
here,
this
here.
Weekend. Put your clocks forward. You spring forward and fall back, and you lose an hour of sleep. But the one thing you got to do is remember to change the batteries in your smoke alarm. Last year, we had the fewest fire deaths ever recorded, 58, but like 80% of those, there was no working smoke detector. And if you'd had, who knows how many of those would have been saved. It's simple. The fire department gives out something like 20 different locations in all five boroughs, giving away batteries donated for smoke alarms. Just call 311 and they'll tell you where to go. So it doesn't cost you anything and it's not a lot of work. And it can save your life.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're in a sound sleep and you've got a fire going, you won't notice it until it's too late.
That's exactly right. And this thing goes off. Simple say, oh, it goes off occasionally, which isn't true. I'd rather have false alarms than not have an alarm when I need one.
Absolutely. While we're on the FDNY and the fire, have you once again said we might have to close more fire stations?
Again? Would we do that?
It seems like we do it like setting the
clock
ahead.
Well, the truth of the matter is that everybody will say we always want more firehouses and more firefighters, and that's true. That would be great. We have budget constraints, and you just got to decide how much you can afford to have. We think that you probably could function with fewer. Keep in mind, the population of the city has changed dramatically in terms of where they live. We have a new building code to make it much safer. The fire department is better trained and faster response time than ever before. So we'll see what happens. But everything is you've got to decide. Do you want another firehouse or another school, another police officer or, you know, another snowplower?
And I don't know if you should or you shouldn't close a firehouse. That obviously
we'll work on it and see.
Well, it's up to
But, you know, the most important thing to me is Sal Cassano's got to tell me that he can keep the city safe.
But firehouses were placed and where they are and in the numbers because of the technology at the time.
Technology, a lot of most of them, John, were placed when the fire...
Horse-drawn.
Horse-drawn or man-drawn, really, even before that. But horse-drawn, sure, absolutely. And the population, you know, lived all very close, and now it's spread out. You know, the eastern part of Queens and even the eastern part of Brooklyn that wasn't populated and certainly not in any... in the concentration, Staten Island, the same thing.
Last week when we sat together, we talked about a program that you were instituting about to combat and try and continue to reduce, because the numbers are coming down when it comes to teen pregnancy. I didn't think that anybody could argue against it, but then Planned Parenthood comes out and says, you know, we're stigmatizing these individuals. Well, maybe we need a little more
stigmatizing. Well, in all fairness, they did write a very nice supportive op-ed piece. Planned Parenthood, I think, conceptually agrees with us. They didn't like the tone of the ads. You know, if you want to, in the days of so much media hitting everybody, if you want to stand out, you got to really do something different, dramatic. You should see the boxes of cigarettes around the world in Europe. Mandated by law, they don't have the brands as much of the tiny letters, but they have pictures of diseased lungs, pictures of people breathing through their throats, families crying at a gravesite. You got to get through the clutter, and it's incumbent on us to explain to young kids that if you have a child, there's an enormous amount of responsibility that goes with it, and it will limit what your options are because you're going to have to spend a lot of time with a kid. If you're the father, and traditionally mothers raise the kids, not always, but, you know, the father's going to have to pay, and the mother's going to have to pay, both in time and in money, and your options to go to school and to do other things, travel, enjoy yourself in other ways. are limited. And it doesn't mean that every teenage out of wedlock birth or even married to teenagers that turns out to be a disaster. There are many that the kids are spectacular. I know one who's the kid's a phenomenal success, but it's much harder when you're younger, and that's what we're trying to explain to kids. If you waited, it would be easier. If you have a baby, you have a responsibility, and we'll do everything we can to help, and hopefully the kid will turn out to be a Nobel Prize winner and take care of his parents or her parents when they retire. But you got to do something dramatic to get the message through, and that's what we're trying to do.
How do you feel about the trial or the soon-to-be-held trial of Suleiman Abu Ghaith?
We went through this before where the federal government wanted to try somebody here and then decided eventually to move him, I think, to Guantanamo. Look, it's the federal government's choice. If they ask help from New York City, particularly the PD, we will give them whatever they need.
Security issue?
No. If you are in a federal court here in New York, you go from the holding pen to the courtroom underground. I mean, you'll have a lot more news people here, use hotel rooms and that sort of thing. Is it disruptive? No street is going to be closed because of this. Would I prefer to have it elsewhere? I'm not going to get involved in that. That's because I don't want to make the president's job any more difficult. He's got to decide, or his attorney general's got to decide what they're going to do. Tell us whatever it is. We have a well-trained and adequate police department to provide them with any services they need, if any.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to take a break here. We're going to add a little something here this morning. Normally we you that if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, now is the time to get in line before it's too late. 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. I thought it interesting this past week that certain advocacy groups blaming the city for a huge increase in the homeless.
I can't figure out what they want to do, given they were the ones, or were one of the ones that caused it, if you think about it. What happens, the city has, there's a law that says, passed by the state, interpreted by a judge, that says we have to provide shelter to anybody. You can arrive in your private jet at Kennedy Airport, take a private limousine, and go straight to the shelter system and walk in the door, and we've got to give you shelter. That's what the law is. I didn't write
There's
the law.
There's no means testing of any way, shape, or form.
This is what the law is, okay? Now, what we used to do is we used to be able to move people out into permanent housing. And there was this program, federal government money, state government money, city government money, called Advantage, and it subsidized people's rents. In fact, what's happened in the last, since the state canceled the program, which meant we didn't get the federal money and the city can't afford to do it on its own, so that program went away. So we're having trouble moving people out of the shelter system. The good news is there are fewer people coming in, but there's nobody going out the door on the other side. And since the state canceled the program, which this organization was in favor of them canceling it, it was the dumbest thing. I couldn't believe what they talk about helping people, and either they are totally duplicitous or they're misguided. But all of a sudden, these people are 30% more in the shelters because of the end of that program. And unless we were to get that money back from the federal and state government, I don't know how you're going to move it out. City taxpayer just cannot go subsidize everybody's rents. And that's fundamentally what these people want.
The city had the facilities?
Yeah, by law, we have to open new shelters. Yeah, we open shelters all the time. You know, you find an old hotel that's been abandoned, or, you know, you create space. The law says you have to do it, and we've got very competent people that run our shelter system, and they know what they're doing. And it's a lot better than it was when we came into office, people being bussed around in the middle of the night because we didn't have beds.
I remember those stories.
Kids would sleep on benches and that sort of thing. Those days are long gone. But we still are stuck with this right to homeless, and we're the only place that I know of in America that has that. Maybe there's some other tiny place, but I think we may very well be the only place. And without this Advantage program, which the state cut back, I don't know how you're going to get people to come out the other side.
I'm reading that in 2008, the city spent $625 million on shelters. This year, it's estimated $820 million.
That's what it costs, guys.
You're running towards $1 billion here.
In Albany, you write the law and say, spend the money, and then we've got to figure it out. And New York City taxpayers have just got to go to call their representatives in Albany and say, we ain't going to do this anymore. You change the law, because the city is, and whoever comes after me, they can yell and scream when they're campaigning. The bottom line is you have to do what the law says. And that's what we're going to do.
$9 minimum wage. Looks like it's going to happen.
Federal is less of a problem for New York State because people can't move to, don't have a benefit of moving to other cities or other states. If the state does it and the other states don't, that's a very competitive disadvantage. If a city were to do it and the rest of the state does, competitive disadvantage. You can question whether or not the government should be involved in setting a minimum wage. I think the country has long since gotten over that. There's a federal minimum wage, and people complain about it, don't want to raise it maybe, but nobody really actively suggests we get rid of it. So the issue is how much, and I don't know how you set that. You should talk to the economists. If you tried to live on $7, $8, or even $9 an hour.
I don't think it's designed for that happen, though, is it?
I have personally always been much more in favor of the earned income tax credit, which is virtually the same in terms of sending a check to people who need help, but it goes to those, you have to have a job, you have to have some income, and then we supplement it. And I've always thought, you know, you're asking people to go to work, try to support their family. That's the American way. And if they just don't have the skill sets or the jobs aren't available, so they can't do that as well as they would like or even enough to survive, helping them out is fine because these are people who are really working very hard. The minimum wage does a very similar kind of thing. But I think the earned income tax credit, you can target it a lot more to those people that really need it.
Pay phones. Do we need pay phones? I understand that there's a contest and it's been whittled down from a number of different kinds and types and
designs?
Yeah,
to use them for other things. In this day and age, when there's so many mobile phones out there, it's easy to say, well, just everybody's got a phone, and almost everybody does. Now, there are a handful of people who don't, and handful is understating it, but as a percentage, it's a handful. And do they, should they have service? And should you make the telephone companies do it? Or if the government, the public wants people to have a service that the private sector finds uneconomic, then the public should do it with public monies. Instead of just, it's like, I've always felt the same thing about rent subsidies. If we want to subsidize rents, you can have a separate discussion as to whether that's good or bad. But if you do it, don't pick a bunch of people like landlords. We should all just kick in. Make a decision which way. We can have that discussion. You can argue it both ways, but don't try to pick. The society, and we've gotten more and more, we want something and we don't want to pay for it. So we find somebody who's powerless and lay the cost onto them. And, you know, making telephone companies keep pay phones, I don't know what the economics of it are, but if they want to do it, let them do it. If they don't, they don't. But if we want to have them and they don't want to do it, then we should pay.
The MTA is going to open up the South Ferry Station, I read this
morning.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Which
That's
they
good
changed
news.
They changed their mind because it had been damaged.
Well, it was a brand
severely.
New station, beautifully built, and then Sandy took it out. Enormous damage, I'm told. I'm glad they looked like, I think, the beginning of April, another month, and they'll have that open. And that'll help people, because when you get off the Staten Island Ferry, or if you work very far downtown, the tip of Manhattan, that's a very useful subway station.
Tom DiNapoli, and this is a state issue, it's not a city issue, but was pointing out the cost of the tunnel, the access tunnel for the Long Island Railroad has jumped in price from, I think, $4 billion to almost $9 billion over 18 years of Is it impossible to build a project like that?
No. Second Avenue, the number 7 extension on the west side, which New York City taxpayers, not the state, city taxpayers are paying for, and being built by the MTA, is on budget, on schedule. The MTA has done a great, I don't know anything about what they've done or even whether they do run, I assume they run these other projects. I'm just not an expert on that. I'm just telling you, the MTA deserves the credit for doing a good job on the extension of number 7, and it'll be done pretty soon. It'll open up a whole new part of Manhattan, and the city taxpayers deserve credit for reaching their pockets, and they will get their money back many, many times over because it will open up an awful lot of jobs and commerce and a tax base in the city.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got a half-hour news, and we want to get a snow and traffic update for everybody as well. Again, two lines open, 800-321-0710. Greg's the guy you got to get through this morning, 800-321-0710. Mr. Mayor, we have some new unemployment numbers out today, and the number, the national number, is down from 7.9 to 7.7.
Yeah, but the unemployment number is relatively meaningless. It is the number of people who have jobs, the number of jobs. And I think the national economy is doing a little bit better. Not going down. It is going up a little bit better. Nowhere near fast enough to give jobs to a lot of the people who want them and a lot of the people who have dropped out of the workforce saying, I'm never going to get a job. I'm not even going to look. And then you don't get counted the unemployment. That's why the unemployment number is bad, is not a really good indicator. In New York City, the unemployment number has gone up a little bit, and it's good because there's a lot more people looking for jobs. We have record number of people working. They just revised the numbers for the end of last year in January, better than anybody had, than it even was reported then. We've gained something like between December and now. We have the largest monthly increase in the number of people working since back in September of 2000. So people are getting jobs, and then people come to New York City looking for jobs. And if we say, John, are you looking for a job? You say yes. Do you have one? No. Okay, then you are incalculated in the unemployed.
So
but if you say, I can't get a job, I'm not going to look, then you're not counted.
So this is how you come to grips with a 9% New York City unemployment rate is because you've got more people that are looking for jobs.
It depends on if you have more people looking for jobs, then it's a good number to go up. If it's fewer people looking for jobs and it goes up, it's a bad thing. And the ways you really can tell, because the only number that's done by phone surveys, and nobody really knows how accurate they are, the number of people actually working are real numbers. So that's what you can judge. The biggest problem you have is that an awful lot of people who do not have jobs and would like them may not have the skill sets for the kind of jobs that are being created. And that's a great challenge. In New York City, we've tried to address that by focusing on things like tourism, where if you don't have great command of the English language or formal education, you still may be able to get a decent job that pays, has benefits, and you can support your family. But nationwide and statewide, it's a great challenge. How do we create the jobs? In New York City, the job growth is there. The economy's booming. Companies are opening, moving here. In the whole regional area, that's not quite true. And there are plenty of poor places with lots of unemployment, not great schools, not a lot of infrastructure. And how do you get young people to move there to create jobs and for those that live there already of all ages and those that want to move there? It's a conundrum around the world and across the country and not just in any one state. You know, you go in a lot of these places, the young people, when they get out of school, are leaving a lot of the rural areas across the country, moving to the big cities. I think the estimates are in another 20 years, 70% of the entire world will live in big cities. So it's not just a phenomenon here.
And you're also watching the Northeast, the Rust Belt states lose population to the southern states where companies are now moving and jobs are moving and taxes are not. There is
some of that. I think you can overstate it a little bit, but there are certainly companies that will open in right-to-work states and where there's lower taxes. There are people who will leave New York and go to Florida, no income tax, no inheritance tax. What we've got to do is we are a high-tax state. You remember, let's go back to our conversation on the homeless. Somebody's got to pay for that. The ways that we compete is to make it so more attractive or so attractive to live in New York that even if the taxes are higher, you say, well, I don't like the higher taxes, but it's worth it. I'm going to stay here. And that's our strategy. And so far, on balance, it's been good. It doesn't solve all the problems. And there's certainly people that you and I would know or that leave. If you take a look at where we send the checks to retired city employees, You know, those are people that don't have an enormous amount of money, but they...
You can track pretty much where they've gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And some people don't value what New York has to offer, value what other places have to offer, and they will move. And, you know, that's their choice. And those other places have nice things. They may have better weather or a slower pace of life or whatever turns you on. But New York, our strategy is to make it a very attractive place, particularly for those who like a faster pace of life and more diversity and things. That's what we, and with that comes a cost.
You probably don't know the answer to this, but how many more days do you have as mayor?
298, and we've got to work hard.
I knew you wouldn't have it.
I'll be working all day. No, I mean, seriously, we've got to, you know, I never want anybody to say we didn't work as hard as we ever did before, if not harder.
That's not where I was going.
And we did in the first and second term we went through.
No,
where
but,
are you going?
No, where I was going is, and because I think I'm interested in this, as someone that has been in your position for now almost 12 years, 11 and a half years, what do you see as the biggest challenge for the tri-state area, which is New York? I mean, is it transportation? Is it...
Well,
is
the first thing you have to do is you have to keep focusing on crime. I mean, it's sad that that's the way you start out all these conversations about how you're doing. First thing is crime. We have the lowest murder rate we've ever had since
we've
kept numbers.
You've got to maintain it. Keep the eye on the ball.
You cannot take your eye off the ball. You cannot... We have programs that have brought down crime, and people say, well, you don't need them anymore because crime's low. That's about as dumb a thing as you can say. We have to, if any, the fact that we are getting fewer guns off the streets when we stop kids and stop and frisk says it's working. And another way is you see it, it's fascinating. Suicide is one of those things where it tends to be spur of the moment. And if you want to get a gun, you don't go to a gun dealer because they'll, you know, gun shops are smart. They'll look and say, wait a second, this is unstable and no. And so you go out on the street and you try to buy a gun. If it's harder to buy a gun, you should see it in a lower suicide rate. And the suicide rate in New York City is half the national average. And it's because the suicide rate with handguns is a tenth the national average. The other categories of how you kill yourself, it's identical here. And if you go, those states across this country with tough gun laws have very low suicide rates with guns. It really does work. It doesn't get every gun off the street, but it really works. And that's where you see it. And those tragedies, you know, and the NRA talks about a bad guy with a gun. I'm sorry. People that kill themselves have serious emotional, mental problems, but they're not bad people in that context.
What about the nuts and bolts things that you see as problems on the go forward? Maybe
well,
problems presently.
Schools, we've made enormous progress in the schools, but there are lots of people that keep trying to stop progress, don't want to evaluate teachers in any meaningful way, don't want to have alternatives like charter schools, or if a school isn't performing, don't want to close it down and change to people who can teach. And we are, in spite of all of the progress we've made, we are falling behind the demands of industry and the improvement in school systems around the world.
You saw those CUNY numbers this week on remediation.
Absolutely. I mean, look, New York City used to be in the top 10. Now we're lucky to be in the top 50. And we've improved more than virtually any other big city. So there's crime, there is education, there's public health. Obesity is replacing smoking as the enormous problem. We've conquered smoking, or at least made a big dent in it. We still have to keep going. Still too many people die of smoking. But life expectancy is a few years more here than in the national average. It's improved 3 years over the last 10 years. And smoking cessation is one of the big things. But this year, more people will die in this world from overeating than from starvation. This year, more people will die in New York City from the effect of overeating than from smoking. It is going to bankrupt our healthcare system. It is just a disaster, and it's growing. It's all in the last 20 years. This is the first disease that has gone from being a rich person's disease to a poor person's disease. If you go back and you look at pictures of the robber barons back in the 20s, and they all had these big stomachs. It was a sign of you were rich and healthy. Today, all those people are doing Pilates and running and have their coaches, and poor people have now started to have those big stomachs. That's not good.
Smoking is one thing. You can say, you can ban the cigarette. You can't ban the food.
No, you can't, but you can have common sense things like the cup size, which you can still get 32 ounces or 64 ounces, any amount you want. But we make it, we remind you, you have to take two cups or four cups back to your seat. That is going to work.
Do you foresee, and I don't mean during your administration or you having anything to do with it, but do you foresee or would you predict that we will see a day someday where foods are restricted?
No, I don't think so, but the public speaks. If you take a look, I think it's something like 20,000 New Yorkers die from the effects of too much salt every year. It's some number like, some crazy number like that. And go into the store, an awful lot of things, low sodium. It's the public pressure. Food companies will respond to what the public wants, and that's good. And what government's job is, I think, is to give you the information and then let you respond. So calorie counts in restaurants. It gives you information. It doesn't stop your choices at all. If you use it, great. If you don't, your choice. But there's nothing wrong with, well, the same thing with portion sizes, which is the 16-ounce cups. If you chose to take two or three, do what you want. It's the same thing with smoking. If you want to go outside and smoke and nobody else has to breathe your smoke, I'm not going to take away that.
All right, we've got some folks on the telephone. Now, I want to make sure that that headset is not too loud for you.
Can't hear anything, John.
Okay, hang on a second. We'll get to the John Gambling Show.
If you did Bill this Rock long here. Enough, you could figure out how to do it.
I'll get it down soon. Don't worry about it. All right, Mr. Mayor, let's go to the telephones. Dave in New Jersey, you're up first with the mayor. Go
Hi,
ahead.
Dave.
How you doing, Mayor? Thank
Good.
You for taking my call. I think
Happy
you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I know you had put a mandate on the sodas. For people's health, because obesity is a big problem. Is there any other thing that you would consider mandating, such as joining a gym or making people walk?
Well, you know, you have to be practical about what legally you can do and what people will do. The nice thing about the soda thing is it's really just a suggestion. So if you want to buy 32 ounces, you just have to carry it back to your seat in two cups, and maybe that would convince you to only take one. But if you want two, you can do it. And I think government's job, as I said before, is to give you advice, not to force you to do things. Although there are some things we force you to do. If there's asbestos in the classroom or in the office building, we force you out. If you want to drink and drive, we try to stop you, although not sometimes obviously not as successfully as you'd like to. Very tragic what happened. But I think some of these other things, calorie counts we've done in chain restaurants, so you can see what you're eating. But when it comes to forcing you, it's really the only thing the government can do practically, and I think should do, is education. Exercise is great for you, but how do you convince people to do it, and should you force them to do it? Probably not.
All right, David, thank you very much for that one. Let's go to Mario out on Long Island. Hello, Mario. Go.
Hi, Mario. Mayor, thank you for taking my call.
Happy
Mayor,
to.
I want to compliment you. On the initiative you took with the charter schools, putting up your own money. It's a wonderful thing what you're doing. I would like to make a suggestion as a businessman who operates in the metropolitan area. You're the mayor, and you're soon going to be a private citizen. The biggest impediment right now for you to correct the public schools is the Triborough Amendment and having municipal unions manipulate that situation so the legislators have no room to go other than to satisfy the union before the students and the taxpayers.
Well, we have the Triborough Amendments for out of the city, in the city. We have exactly the same thing. It's called the Taylor Law. It basically says that a union can't strike, but that the city can't lock them out. And if they can't come to an agreement, the old contract just stays in effect. And it's a reasonable balance. People that criticize unions, in many cases, I've always thought we should be criticizing ourselves. The city government and state government and federal government gives away a lot of things to organized municipal and state and federal workers because they vote as a block and have a lot to say about the reelection of the people who are deciding how much they're going to get paid or what pensions they're going to have or that sort of thing, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you don't like it, don't blame the union. Blame the government that supposedly is working for you, who's giving away things we can't afford. And I've, you know, defended the unions here. I think a union's job is to try to get as much as they can in terms of money, working conditions, and fewer hours. It's the city and the public's job to decide what services we want and how much we're willing to pay. And, you know, if we give away too much because it's going to have an influence on our elections, re-elections, then maybe the public will come along and say, well, I'm going to go in the other direction.
All right, Mr. Marish, you can tell by the music behind us. Unfortunately, we've run out of time.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's what happens here when you're having too much fun.
I guess it is. Be careful. It's slippery outside. And the snow should pretty much, not all, but most would melt later. It's going to get warm, but
be
careful.
Are you parading this weekend?
There's a parade. There is this weekend also. Remember, go back.
Set
your clocks ahead. Spring forward and check your batteries and your smoke detectors and CO2 detectors. It'll save your life.
We will see you next Friday. Enjoy the week ahead.
Thanks.
And the weekend and the marching. We continue our march here on the John Gambling Show.